Hey everyone, Jared Sebesta here, host of Repurposed. Here's your podcast. I hope you enjoy.
When I got to the U.S. and then after the physical needs were met, secure in that, then these nightmares started to show up. And I would wake up in a cold sweat, and that would happen almost every night. And I couldn't tell anybody, or I didn't have the language skills to tell my foster mother even. And so I would just deal with that. But when I gave my heart to the Lord, that went away.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to Repurposed, a show dedicated to inspire you to live a life of purpose, of intentionality, of meaning. Ultimately, we want you living a high-impact life. I'm your host, Jared Sebesta of Taichus Financial Group, a retirement planning firm based in West Central Minnesota, where we teach and inspire our clients to have true wealth. If you want to find more information about that and our company, just go to our website, taichusfinancial.com. Well, on this episode of Repurposed, I'm bringing you part one of a conversation I had with a guy by the name of Darth Lee. Darth is a Cambodian missionary. And recently, I had the honor of hearing him speak at our church in Minnesota, where he shared his testimony. And I gotta tell you, it was one of the most gut-wrenching testimonies I've ever heard from someone, certainly in person. Here's his backstory. In 1975, when Darth was only 7 years old, he was living in Cambodia at the time. And the Khmer Rouge, a radical communist group, came into power. The Khmer Rouge took over the city of Pompang, where he and his family were living at the time, and they basically forced everybody out of their homes, into the streets, and out into the jungle. And this marked the beginning of a nightmare, of a genocidal reign of the Khmer Rouge that killed and tortured over 2 million Cambodians. It's only by a miracle of God that Darth not only survived, but is alive today and well. In part one of this interview, we're going to hear his story of survival during this horrible time in human history, and ultimately how he made his escape after 3 years of living in labor camps, being starved nearly to death, and being tortured. And I have to warn you, the nature of this podcast is extremely graphic and may not be suitable for some listeners. Here's part one of my conversation with Darth Lee.
We walked out from the city with only the clothes on our backs, and we didn't know what to do or where to go. And I remember just seeing corpses on the side of the road as we were marching out. And these corpses, some were soldiers that got killed in the fighting, you know, a couple of days previous. Others were just residents and general populations that were killed by the Khmer Rouge because they didn't want to leave. And so, first of all, when people started to leave, some people were able to carry their belongings. And then a couple of days later, you see all their stuff kind of scattered on the side of the road because they get too heavy or too tired to carry, all these items. And so you got, even money. I remember seeing the Chinese who are, you know, who were the merchants class of the country. They had all these monies that they stuff in bags full of money, but a couple of days later, we would see all these money scattered along the roadside. Anyway, so just this mass of humanity would push out. And so I walked for several days, and then our family, my mother and my sister and I and a couple of our relatives would just camp at the side of the road during nighttime. And then during the day, like everybody else, we would just continue to walk out into the countryside. Hmm. And after several weeks of walking, when we got far enough and then the population kind of thinned out because people would go into a different direction, we stayed at this one location. We didn't know anybody, but we just didn't know what else to do. When we stayed there, the Khmer Rouge soldiers started to come around, and then they congregated us, they bring us together, and then they put us in military trucks and they ship us across the country to another part of the country, a place called Bosat. And so we spent a couple of days in this truck, and the truck, you can't see anything because it was fully covered. And so they just jammed us in these trucks and drove us across the country. And once we came out of it, they started to separate people and sent the people to labor camps. And so I was taken away from my mother at that point and sent to a labor camp for children, ages 7 all the way up to 12, preteen ages. And then my mother and sister went to a different labor camp, of course, along with everybody else. And then were forced to work in the rice paddies, manual labor. And then they would systematically torture and kill people, those that were quote unquote corrupted. Yeah. So I didn't understand a whole lot. I didn't understand what the circumstances were and the situation around me. And so I was just trying to survive.
Yeah.
As a child, like I mentioned, they took me from my mother and I was sent to a labor camp for children. And even as children, they forced us to work in the rice paddies. What had happened was they made these bamboo baskets and we were to use the baskets to fill with dirt, and we would carry that all day long. They forced us to dig channels and built dikes across the rice paddies that probably would serve no real purpose other than to perhaps just to work us to death.
Yeah.
And the entire country was turned into these massive labor camps, you know. And so the adults would do the same thing. And so in the labor camps that I was in, they forced us to dig these channels and build dikes. And then they gave us one small cup of rice water as our ration. That was our food.
Yeah.
They put a handful of rice in a big pot and fill that with water and boil that, and each child would get one small cup of that. And of course, massive of children were dying, and I was able to stay alive by eating different kinds of insects that one would find in the rice paddies, different kinds of leaves and grass roots, barks, and to stay alive that way. But the thing was, in addition to the starvation and the labor that they forced us to work, they would torture and kill the children around noon when it's the hottest time of the day. And in that part of the world, it's quite hot.
Yeah.
They would tell us to pause from our working, and we would sit in the mud in the rice paddies, and they would come by these soldiers. And these soldiers, they were just kids themselves. They're 15, 16-year-old kids. Hmm. They're the sons and daughters of the Khmer Rouge leaders. And they would come by, and they would randomly select a handful of children, 5, 6, 7 of us at a time, and then bring them to the front. And those of us that were not being selected were forced to watch as they would torture and kill the children. They would take plastic bags and put over their head, and we would forced to watch their faces. They would take pliers and pull off their fingernails and toenails. They would slash kids' stomach open, and they would pull their innards and show that to us, those of us that were just sitting there. And they would do this every day.
Yeah.
I remember so vividly even now, they took a boy that was working next to me and several other kids as well, and they brought them to the front, and then they tie their feet together and their arms behind their back, and they send a soldier to cut a frond from a palm tree. And now, if you look at a frond of a palm tree, it has its edges really sharp, and it it's kind of jagged edge, and
yep.
it's just like a it's like a teeth of a saw.
Right.
And they took that, and then they trying to decapitate these kids' head with that. And of course, just the scream till this day, if I close my eyes, I can still hear the scream and the gore, the blood and everything else. Wow. And I remember they looked directly at me, one of the soldiers, and they said, "Don't you turn away," because some of the kids were just kind of close their eyes. Yeah. They said, "Don't turn away because you will be next." Mm. And so this would happen every day, like I've said. They tortured me several times. I remember one day while I was working in the rice paddies, and like I've said, because of the hunger, all of us was in that same conditions. While we were working, we would just, with our eyes, we scanned the ground trying to find different insects that we might be able to find, or different kinds of grass roots. And one day I saw a snail bopping in that rice paddies next to me, and because I was the closest, I was able to pick it up. And I know that they were watching me, and they would kill me if I would eat that snail, but the hunger was so intense, I didn't care. And so I broke the shell off with my hand, and I popped the snail in my mouth, and sure enough, they came over, and these guards, these soldiers, along with their AK-47s, they carry these bamboo canes that they would use to beat us. And so they used that and beat me into the mud. And then they tied my feet together and my arms behind my back. And they dragged me across the rice paddies to the place that we would normally come to sleep at night. It's not a camp or anything. It's just a higher ground. And when we got to that place, it's about a half a mile away, and then they found a tree that was full of these red ants, and they tied me against that tree and left me there. And then they left a couple of guards watching me, and then the rest went back to the rice paddies where all the kids were, and then waited until the rest of the children come back at night. And once the children came back, and they untied me from the tree, but my feet were still bound together, and they forced the children to make a circle around me, and then they asked the children, or forced them to come up one at a time, repeating a statement after them, after the guards, saying that what I did was wrong, was against their rule, and the children, they would not follow my example or do as I did. And then after they said that, the children were forced to beat me. They would push me to the ground, and I couldn't balance myself, of course, and I would fall, and the children would stomp on me and would kick me. And then the next child would come and repeat the process. And I don't know when, but through that process, I was unconscious. And I don't know how long I was out. I remember it just came out of it. Just, of course, my body was just full of pain, and I could barely move, but I was so thirsty. And I know that at the edge of that high ground where we were normally sleeping, the rice paddies full of water. So I crawl out to the edge of that ground and get some water. And then they came back and they kicked me several more times. They beat me with the bamboo canes, and they said, "Next time we will finish you off." But at that point, I didn't understand why they just didn't just kill me. But knowing what I know now, I believe there's God has protected my life. So
it's a miracle that you are alive, no doubt about that. This went on for a couple of years by only God's miracle that you managed to survive, and then something kind of happened politically, and that gave you an escape out. Talk about that.
So the Khmer Rouge was in power for almost 4 years. I think the official date or time frame is 3 years 10 months, I believe. One day, guns went off and bombs exploded all around us. Yeah. And we didn't know what was happening. But what had happened was the politics, like you said, have changed. So the Vietnamese at that point, it was just one country was no longer North or South Vietnamese, but it just one communist country, started and decided to invade Cambodia. And so they were coming in. And so the Khmer Rouge were fighting with the Vietnamese. And so the bombs were exploding all around us. And as children, we didn't know what was happening. But those of us that had enough strength, we just for survival, we crawl and found a hole to hide in. And so we went in there and just, you know, stick our head in the hole and hide for several hours. When the shooting had stopped, when the bombings had stopped exploding all around us, we crawl out and we looked around and noticed that the guards that were watching us, they were no longer there. They had run away. And the Vietnamese, the soldiers, they came close to scare off these guards, but they kept on going, chasing after the Khmer Rouge. And so we were left in the middle of literally nowhere.
All
the middle
alone.
Of this, yeah. Time goes on. People started to congregate. And so there was a group of about 100 people in this particular group that my sister and I was in. And the adults, they talk among themselves. And then somebody within that group said, perhaps we can escape. One night we made the journey. We started to walk from where we were headed west towards the borders between Cambodia and Thailand. Now it's about 200 miles away. We walked at night because we had to stay away from, of course, the Khmer Rouge and the Vietnamese. Even the Vietnamese didn't want us to leave. And then bandits and all others, dangers. During the day, we were tied in the bushes. And then at night, we would come out and we would walk. And we would find whatever we can to eat along the trails and the jungles.
Yeah.
But the thing was, we had to walk across a jungle that was, and it still is, filled with landmines. And as it's almost every night, as people walk in front of me, and they would step on these landmines, and of course the explosion, and those of us behind would hide as best we can, and of course comes with that the screaming and all that. And then when things calm down, we come out and we looked around, and sure enough, several people would step on these landmines. They would got their limbs blown off. These, what they call anti-personal landmines, their purpose was to maim and not so much as to kill. And so many times the people were still alive and they were just screaming in pain and in terror and, you know, missing their limbs and the blood and everything else. And they would plead to those of us that were not, affected by the landmines to help them.
Right.
But we couldn't help. Some with family members, they do what they can to help, but most of the times they just left them there.
Right.
And so as a child, I remember stepping on the people as they were laying there screaming because I couldn't walk around them because of these landmines. Mm-hmm. And so almost every night this would happen, but we – those of us were still alive, just kept on going. And it took us over 2 weeks when eventually we got to the border between Cambodia and Thailand. Mm. And that small group of about 100 or so people was reduced to around 25. I don't remember the exact number, but but that. And so, yeah, those people that survived the killing fields, the genocide, only to got blown up by these landmines. It's an incredible, you know, story and tragic within itself.
Talk about what happened next. You ended up getting adopted by a family in Minnesota. Take us there.
Yeah. So I didn't know, what my life is going to be like or what will happen. And when we got to the border at that point, the world have acknowledge what happened in Cambodia, the genocide that took place because all these refugees were coming out. And within that time frame, the UN were able to get the Thai government agreed to set up refugee camps. And then they gave us rice, and we stayed there for several weeks, and then several more months after that, as more and more people started to come. And so that place would turn into a camp. And then the UN, they began to ask different countries to take in refugees. And so through that process, I was able to come to Minnesota at the age of 11 years old as an orphan refugee. I came with my sister, but then we were separated once we got to Minnesota. And so I was left in the care of the St. Paul Ramsey Child Protective Agency. And so they put me in a foster home. And my foster mother attended an Assembly of God church in St. Paul. Because of that, we would go to church, three times a week.
Yeah.
She took in other refugee kids as well. And so, as days goes on and I started to, get enough, food and the healings begin to take place. And
yeah. How long did that take, by the way? 'Cause you're like 11 years old at this time. Is that correct?
Yes.
And then, yes. How long did it take for you physically just to kind of get around to quote, kind of normal?
Probably 6-7 months.
Yeah. Of just like a healthy, steady diet of just recovering after the years of abuse and torture and famine.
Right.
Wow.
And so, I remember arriving in Minnesota in May, and of course, I went to school, and the other children, they of course didn't know what my experience was, and I didn't tell them. I didn't have the language to tell them. Even my foster mother didn't really fully grasp what happened to me. And so, she would faithfully take us to church, and I continued to recover. And, when I was 14 years old, so 3 years later, I was part of the youth group at our home church, and, they had a youth camp. And I went to the camp, and the speaker was talking about salvation and invited the children to accept the Lord. And was, you know, I just went along. So I went to the front and I asked God to, come into my heart. I didn't fully understand what that entailed, but, I just did it because the other children were doing it. And so I'd accept Jesus as my Lord and Savior. And that was that. There was nothing traumatic had happened, but what had happened was, you know, the camp ended. I came back home and life somewhat goes on. But, one day about 3 months or so later, I was just sitting on my bed there and realized that I didn't have the nightmares anymore. Mm. Now, when I got to the U.S. and then after the physical needs were met, you know, enough food and shelter and that, when I secure in that, then these nightmares started to show up. Mm. I would wake up in the middle of the night and then just these vivid dreams and nightmares. And I would wake up in a cold sweat, you know, and that would happen almost every night. And I couldn't tell anybody, or I didn't have the language skills to tell my foster mother even. And so I would just deal with that. But when I gave my heart to the Lord, that went away.
Well, that was part one of my conversation with Darth Lee. Just an incredible story of human survival only by God's grace is he alive and well today. And as you heard right at the end there, a man that not only survived, but has been healed and restored through the Spirit of God from his horrible, horrible past. What does this story have to do with purpose? Well, I would say everything. Did you catch what he said there near the beginning of our chat when he was being beaten? Even as a young boy, he wondered, why didn't they just kill me? And he said, I now know it was because God had a bigger purpose for me. Next week, in part two, we're going to hear the rest of Darth's story. He's going to talk about how he was called to go back to Cambodia, to this place of horror, and how he miraculously found his mother. And he'll talk about the thing that drives him to make a living in Cambodia with him and his wife and serve the people of this country. That is next time on Repurposed. Just a reminder, this show is based on a book by Ben Tejas called Repurposed, The Untold Story of Retirement in America. If you want the first two chapters of that book totally free, just go to our website, tejasfinancial.com. Click on Heard Us on the Radio for your free gift just for listening here today. And as always, a big thanks to Faith Radio for helping sponsor this program. If you missed any or all of this episode, visit myfaithradio.com to hear or download the podcast there. I'm Jared Sebesta. We'll see you next time on Repurposed. Thanks so much for checking out this episode of Repurposed. Just a reminder, these podcasts are only available because of generous support of people just like you. If you'd like to make a gift and support Faith Radio, go to the website, myfaithradio.com. Also, another way you can help is by sharing these podcasts on social media and subscribing. Just click subscribe on iTunes or your favorite podcast player, and you'll be sure to never miss a show.